Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
an ongoing conversation
with ministry leaders
about embracing complexity
and uncertainty
with joy
and faithfulness.
Hi, my name is Amy Valdez-Barker, and I am here today to have a wonderful conversation with a friend and colleague, Karina Aragon Buchanan. Karina and I met through Candler School of Theology in the religious education class that she took, and I am really excited to learn more about her experience there and about her ministry at Eastside Church. So, Karina, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to Eastside Church in Atlanta?
Of course, I would love to. Amy, thank you so much for having me. I am originally from Florida, but I am a first-generation American, so I went back and forth from my family's country in Costa Rica to Florida, and so very, like, bicultural, and that has really just shaped how I view the world and has been a big part of myself and my story. But then I came to Atlanta because, you know, I just had the crazy idea that I wanted to go to seminary, and so I found Candler, thought that this would be a great fit for me. And also, I just love Atlanta. And so that was a great two for one, if you will. So I came up here, and then I was crazy enough to also even start in the beginning of the pandemic. I started August of 2020. So my class was a guinea pig in a lot of ways of trying to figure out for Candler how to do this thing online. And then I was actually hired at Eastside right before that in February of 2020. So I had exactly one gathering with the folks here at Eastside as a staff person before everything was flipped on its head. And here we are.
Nothing like all kinds of new experiences to get things rolling.
Yes.
Well, so we met one another in this religious education class, and it was really sort of unique in many ways. There were so many diverse students from this class. They were from different denominations, different faith backgrounds, and we even had people who were proclaimed agnostic, atheist, all kinds. So when you think about your ministry at Eastside and your experience at Candler, what are some of the similarities in these groups who are seeking more about religion and the Christian faith?
So I think that something that is often presumed of folks that enter into divinity school or seminary is that everyone's on the exact same page. And that is definitely not the truth. And it's particularly my experience at Candler, it was not true. And also an interesting part of that was a lot of folks that I met and then got to hear their stories. They shared often that they might have entered in a place that is very different from where they're leaving. And so they entered into a place that they would declare themselves as Christian and use that label. And then they kind of ventured through their journey in grad school and were leaving and said, actually, I don't think that this actually fits me at all anymore. So that was a very interesting part of getting to hear some people's stories at Candler. And then on the flip side, or parallel to it, I should say, my experience here at Eastside is always interesting because I work with a lot of students, particularly middle and high school students. And one of my favorite things about that age, besides being just so rambunctious and chaotic and just so much fun, truly, they don't ever enter a space with me wanting to know more than them. So they come into my youth group and I can tell that they have their walls up, that they're trying to scope out the scene, and who knows why they're here. Like, maybe their parents are dragging them here, or maybe they have a friend who came, or maybe they heard that it was fun. They just thought they'd check it out. But I've had multiple students proclaim as they enter through the space that they think that they may actually be atheist or agnostic and they're not actually so into being a Christian. And I always kind of just shrug and I have to hold back a laugh. And I say, cool. What's your name, by the way? What are your pronouns? Come on in. Do you want a piece of candy? And I just kind of continue on. And the amount of conversations I have with some of these students afterwards of just months of knowing them and getting to build relationship is, oh, you never pressured me into identifying as something. And I was like, well, I don't need you to. That's great if you do, and that's great if you don't. And so I share that because I think that while the ages are different, grad school and also middle and high school, I think that there are a lot of parallels here and that things are more connected than we assume that they are, is that a lot of times, at least my experience, having been someone who was raised in the church, is that we often try to get put into these boxes and also given a box where God is seemingly already existing in it. And I think that oftentimes folks like to wrap things up really neatly in a bow and tell us what to think or to do or to believe, and this is the right thing to do, and this is what Jesus would say, and this is, you know, left and right. And while, yeah, there's some space and truth for that, I think keeping that box open and allowing for people to explore what their language around Christianity, their language around spirituality just in general, comes down to just, it's just language. And oftentimes when I'm talking with folks, we're describing the same thing, and I just use the term God and they use the term higher power. And so it's like, at the end of the day, we're talking about the same thing. And how important is it that we use a specific language or we don't, is just something that's just been very interesting.
Yeah. And in many ways, it takes a sense of humility in order to kind of approach it in that way. So often, as you said, we get in this concretizing of language that God can only be described this way or God can only be experienced that way.
Yes.
And that has been off-putting. And it makes me wonder about how off-putting that has been for generations.
Totally.
Like all the statistics are changing and we're having a really hard time, I think, in some ways reaching millennials and Gen Z.
Yeah.
So as one who is a self-proclaimed cusper on the cusp of millennial and Gen Z, and you're working with a lot of Gen Zs, what have you heard out there that church leaders need to pay attention to for these folks who are sort of seeking, trying to figure it out? Even those who come into seminary believing and then leave questioning. What are the things that you notice?
I would say the number one thing that I notice is that there needs to be a lot less talking and a lot more listening. And that's such a seemingly small thing, but it really is the name of the game, I think. I think you're right that there have been generations now of church trauma that has not been processed and has not been named and has not been given space to explore. And a trauma-informed ministry is what I think is the next part of the church. And I think that is already happening in a lot of ways, but the language and naming what that is actually quite powerful. My time here at Eastside has been one of my favorite experiences. But while I have and am still working with a lot of Gen Z in the middle and high school department, my ministry has expanded by a response to a need that I saw in the community, and frankly, a need for myself as well, which was creating a space specifically for folks who identify as queer and for folks that identify as somewhere on the spiritual journey. So I started a ministry at Eastside called Imago Dei. And it started simply as five folks in the room who, well, there was one person who had never been to Eastside before. They had a friend that invited them, and the other four were members of Eastside. But we've grown since that day. We're now at, our roster runs to 50 people. But I share that not because a number I think is even necessarily important or should be impressive or anything like that. I share it mostly because there's clearly something that folks are thirsty for that is being unmet. And while this ministry in particular was looking at a particular marginalized group within the church, I think this is true for all people in the church of what does it look like to be opening a space, opening a door for folks who have felt like they have not been able to be their complete self in a space, and that they have not been seen completely despite being told that God loves them and God sees them as whole. So that is something that I think is really important for church leaders to hear. You know, going through Candler, you're kind of trained to talk a certain way, to think a certain way, any sort of, you know, seminary and pastor training. And I think that there is a lot of importance to that. There is importance to our tradition as a Christian faith and things like that. But there is also a really large importance and a really demanding importance of creating space for the next generation to come in and for us to learn from them, for us to sit back and just listen. I think that's the big one right now.
Yeah. Well, and in the religious education class, it was for me a first time teaching across that kind of diversity, teaching religious education in a group that did have atheist, agnostic, Unitarian, even Muslim, Buddhist, that focus on religious education. As a Christian educator, made it a little bit more challenging.
Totally.
So as you think about even religious education and Eastside's mission, because you say Eastside's mission is to practice resurrection through our embodiment of the movement Jesus catalyzed 2,000 plus years ago. what is the generative response that we are, as Christians, responsible to sharing about this movement that was catalyzed 2,000 plus years ago? And how do you go about doing that in such a pluralistic way?
Yeah. You know, the funny thing about our society and westernized Christianity specifically is that we love to forget that Jesus wasn't Christian. And we love to kind of leave that out of conversation. And it's always a passing remark. But I wonder what it looks like for us to remember that and look at the wider ministry of Jesus. And Eastside's mission of practicing resurrection is just a simple way of saying, what does it mean if we were reborn every single day? What if we woke up each day with the idea that we are given new life? And following what Jesus has done already. And so I say all of that to say, what does it mean for us to create space for folks to give us new life? To, as we enter into these different spaces, and we might already have assumptions made and have a certain way of thinking, and I'm not saying that that's wrong, but what does it mean for us to carry just an open hand as we walk through different groups of people, as we listen? And what a better time than now in our world that there is so much constant conflict. There is so much. I mean, we're talking on a day where we just heard of another mass shooting that happened last night. And so this is something that is constantly happening. What does it look like for us to embody a resurrection and for us to identify as Christian in a way that's modeled after Jesus Christ? But what does that mean translated to the rest of the world? And I say that very open-ended because I think it's different for different people. I know what I think, but what do the rest of you think, you know? And a conversation can ensue from there.
Yeah, I was just listening to another podcast this morning, and it was talking about this women's group made up of both Muslim women and Jewish women. Mm-hmm. Who were protesting against what is happening in Israel, Gaza right now.
Yeah.
And it was such a testament because women and children are the ones being killed.
Yes.
In the midst of all of these wars. And if we are to raise a better generation, no matter what faith we're coming from, we've got to be able to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to be able to allow that space to say, hey, let us explore who the full embodiment of what God is calling us to be.
Yes.
Today.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about even Eastside's presence in the community that you're in, which you're in a pretty diverse community down there in Atlanta.
Yeah.
What is the church's sort of witness to what discipleship mm-hmm. means in this time and era and in this place?
I think that's a really important question. Eastside is a part of the United Methodist denomination. The global mission there is to go and make disciples in the world. That word gets thrown around a lot in Christianese, as I like to say. But what it means actually in practice is a completely different thing. We are situated in East Atlanta Village, which, if you are not familiar, is a very grungy part of town. And it's a lot of fun. I've loved living here. I've made my home here in East Atlanta. But there are different folks. And also, we're dealing with a neighborhood that has been heavily gentrified. And so we're also dealing with the history of a lot of racism that has happened in Atlanta, and specifically here in East Atlanta, and a housing crisis of rent being so high up that folks that have lived here generationally for their entire lives are now having to move out. So what does discipleship, what does that look like for a church who has been here and has a not so pretty background of being specifically a very white church in a very black neighborhood for a long time? What does that mean for this community? And I think that that's a question that has been at the forefront of Eastside for a long time. And I would almost argue that it has to continue to be, because it's going to change as people move in and out of this space. It's going to change. And so I can only talk to where we're at right now and only speak to where we're at right now. But from a practical place, our response is, after the pandemic, things changed drastically with housing and living in East Atlanta. We saw an uptick of folks who were suddenly sleeping on our steps and making we have a food pantry outside of our church. And so our food pantry was suddenly being constantly emptied in a way that we had never seen. And then we started to ask questions and started to remember that the pandemic, like to forget, but East Atlanta has no food bank in this area. East Atlanta has no shelter in this area for folks to walk if they do not have a vehicle, it is quite far, or otherwise you have to try to find some money to get on MARTA. And if you know anything about MARTA, it is extremely unreliable. And so a big part of Eastside's reevaluation of what making disciples looks like is, what does it mean to be a justice-oriented church? What does it mean for folks to be disciples of Christ while also realizing that we live in late-stage capitalism? And how do we hold these two things in tandem and respond the way that we believe is right and what we've been nudged by the Holy Spirit to do, but at the same time also realize that folks are hungry, not just for food, but folks are hungry and in need of new life. That has been where we've been at as a church. And we'll see where that question, you know, and that answer goes as the years come.
Yeah. So as you think about what's the key message that pastors and ministry leaders need to hear about your generation, the next generation, and this idea of discipleship, this idea of practicing resurrection through the embodiment of the movement, you got 1,000 preachers and plus in the room. What would you say to them? What's the key message that you would say they absolutely need to hear, they need to soak in, they need to really carry away from our conversation?
I think I would just ask them a question instead of maybe giving them a sentence with a period at the end. But my question would be, when was the last time you invited someone that looked completely different than you, that was maybe a lot younger than you, invited them in, asked them what they thought the church should be doing in this day and age, and actually responded to what they said instead of just listening? What if we listened and did? That would be my question for them.
Karina, it has been a joy to be in conversation with you. I learned so much from you and from your colleagues in our religious education class together, and I look forward to watching how the Holy Spirit uses you in some transformative ways for the next few generations to come. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network
of pastors and congregations
committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference
in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.